Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we talk books this hour with Nancy Pearl. That's all I have to say, and it's going to be a great hour. She will give us recommendations of books for the holiday season. She really knows what she's talking about. She has read so much, and she remembers so much. And we like books, so this is always one of my favorite hours. Nancy, of course, in case you have no idea who she is, there are very few people who listen to this show who are in their category, but there might be one or two. Nancy is the Librarian of the Year. She has been a librarian for a number of years. She worked as a librarian and a bookseller in Detroit, Tulsa, and Seattle. She came up with this idea if all Seattle read the same book, which spread all over the country. She's the former executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. She has written a number of books, the Booklust series with Nancy. She's a regular commentator about books on NPR's Morning Edition and on public radio stations throughout the country. She, in 2004, became the 50th winner of the Women's National Book Association Award for her extraordinary contribution to the world of books. And she has also judged some books, Pulitzer Prize-winning books. And there's an interesting piece that she wrote about book awards and how meaningful or meaningless they may be. I thought we would talk about that at some point during this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls. They're already coming in. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Nancy Pearl. How are you? You know, I just had this image, I don't know why, before I started talking to you. Wouldn't it have been fun to have known you when we were kids and we could have gone jump roping? I could see you as a jump roping buddy.
I was a jump roper.
Okay, I thought you might be.
I loved it.
Did you?
I did.
That's great. All right, then it didn't come out of nowhere.
And I wish we had known each other as kids, too, because then we would have remained friends and I could have gone on those nice trips with you and your other friends.
I know. Oh, well, at least we found each other at some point in life. late as it may be. A good Thanksgiving did you have?
Yes, very nice.
Good.
Yes.
One of your favorite holidays, too, I'm sure?
Yeah, it is my favorite, certainly my favorite eating holiday.
Yeah, mine too. It's funny how you can gain weight. I think I gained 2 pounds in a day, if that's possible.
I don't even want to think about it.
I don't. I shouldn't have weighed myself. I never do, but I just thought I would do an experiment. Oh, my gosh, it's true. You can gain 2 pounds in a day. Oh, my. Well, all right, we're going to talk books. We have pens and papers ready because this is our holiday giving suggestion list from you. And so, let me just ask the obvious question, and that's what's really exciting you in the world of reading the last couple months.
Well, one of the fiction books that I loved the most is a book called In Zanesville, and it's by Joanne Beard. It's her first work of fiction. She did a collection of essays called Boys of My Youth a few years ago. But this is a story of an unnamed 14-year-old girl growing up in a small Midwestern town. It's called Zanesville, but it is not Zanesville, Ohio. I think it's a thinly disguised Peoria, Illinois.
Oh.
Because the town, as she says, the heroine, main character says, the narrator, says that it's known for its farm implements. and, you know, the factory that makes them. And she's growing up in a very, not very happy family. And she... this is just what it's like to be 14 years old in a difficult family, in a difficult situation, but with a sense of humor that is just, and a voice that is just absolutely remarkable to read about. And I just wanted to share a couple of my favorite. There's a line in here where she says, terriers are utterly loyal to their masters. Of course, sometimes their masters are tennis balls. And then there's this, which I know that you will love, Kathleen, and our listeners will love, because this is about books. She's talking in here, in this section, about the favorite place where she used to read when she was much younger, which was behind a chair in the living room. Mm. And this is what she says. No, I still have to. Oh, here it is. Okay. She says, I still like it back here. The familiar scuffs and scribbles above the baseboard, the bright, unfaded back of the green chair, the headless carpet tack you have to watch out for. This is where the pivotal events of my childhood unfolded while I ate banana and root beer popsicles, two by two, tucking the sticks neatly under the skirt of the chair. It's where Sunnybank Lad met Lady, Ken met his friend Flicka, Atlanta burned, Manderley burned, Lassie came home, Jim ran away, Alice got small, Wilbur got big, David Copperfield was born, Beth died, and on an endless, gloomy winter afternoon, Jody shot his yearling.
Oh.
Isn't that wonderful?
That is lovely.
Now,
that
I have
lovely.
To say, in the interest of full disclosure, I gave this to both my daughters to read, and both of them said, individually, without consulting each other, it was much too depressing for them.
Really?
Yes. My younger daughter said, that she knows that people grew up like this, but she did not want to be with them.
Oh.
She hadn't, and she did not want to be with them,
huh.
which I didn't find. I mean, it is not a happy book in the sense of you're going to roll up your chair laughing, but the writing is so spectacular, and this portrait of this girl and all that 14 can be is just so good.
And what's the name again? Spell it.
It's called two words, In Zanesville.
Zanesville.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's this wonderful scene where she and her best friend are in the school band, and there's a parade through town, and of course they're marching in it as part of the band, and they have to wear those tall white hats that the band members wear, and in the midst of walking down the main street of the town, they look at each other, and they both realize simultaneously that if they go through with this, they will never live it down. The sight of them with those hats will be with them forever. And so they quit the band right then.
Oh, I think I'll have to read this one.
Oh, it's
this
so
one
good.
Sounds good. And the key for me, when you said exquisite writing, that's number one for me for a book. It needs to be really beautifully written.
Well, that's so important to me as well. And somebody, one of my students said it, I think, so wonderfully. She said, it really has to be well written. Everything else is negotiable.
Yes, yes. Well put. We do a lot of, as you know, nonfiction for this show. One of my favorites, I don't know if you've seen it, but I think you would like it, is this compilation of columns that have been written over the last 100 years or so. Some of the best newspaper columnists, Deadline artist John Avlon was the editor of it. And it's kind of a walk through important times in history, World War II and McCarthyism and various presidencies, written by people who had a short amount of space, but it's amazing what you can say. I think you would like it. Deadline Artists is the name of it, with all kinds of famous and not as famous, but really exquisite writing from the best of columnists.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, I think you would like it. All right, let's go to phone calls. Do you mind? They're here. They're waiting for you, Nancy. Boyd in Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello, Nancy. I hope both of you had a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Hope you did too, Boyd.
It was very, very nice, very relaxing. Well, I read this past summer a really good book by a relatively new author, Felix J. Palma. It's called The Map of Time. If anyone out there likes the late Victorian period and likes Herbert George Wells, they're in for a real treat. This book was a really fun read. I can't put it any more than that. And currently, I finished up one book and reading another one by the author Robert Bloch. That's B-L-O-C-H. He has a Milwaukee connection. He's passed on now. But his big claim to fame was he wrote Psycho. But the two books from him, the one I finished was The Jekyll Legacy, sort of an unofficial sequel to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I'm currently reading Night of the Ripper, which is about Jack the Ripper. He's got a really good style. It can take a while to get into him. He's very, very talented. And then just my question is, Nancy, have you read anything along the lines of this theme called steampunk. It seems to be a little trendy right now, but if you've read anything, I'd be interested.
Yes. Steampunk is, I love science fiction and fantasy, or I love much of it, but steampunk is something that just more or less leaves me cold. So I'm not as fond of steampunk as other of the subgenres of that, of science fiction. But there is a book that I did enjoy quite a bit called The Half-Made World by Felix Gilman, which I believe would absolutely count as cyberpunk. Scott Westerfeld, who writes for children, has done a whole steampunk trilogy, which any of the librarians can identify for you. But I'm trying to remember The Half-Made World. It's the first of at least two books, and somebody actually said it should be called The Half-Finished World, because there's going to be much more in the second book, we believe. But I think that that would be a good one for you to read.
I just found this. You're all over the internet. Sometimes you have to. I find you in unexpected places. So I found you, I think, on a Facebook page. And these are just short, but some of them caught my eye. Wowie Zowie. I like that. Wowie Zowie. Right, what a book. Right. Mark Richards' House of Prayer number 2 is simply amazing reading experience. Check it out right now.
Well, that book, I read it with, no, a friend recommended it to me. And she and I do not have the same taste in books. And I approached it with not high expectations, but I was simply blown away by it. And it's a memoir, and it's painful to read in places, but again, the writing just lifts it. He's a poet. He should be a poet. It lifts it just so above the ordinary memoir. It's wonderful.
Mm, good. An email from Travis in Appleton. I'm looking for a book suggestion for my roommate and friend, Rebecca, who is a fun-loving hippie, a year out of college and looking for work. Any suggestions?
Oh, a fun-loving hippie.
Right.
golly. Well, you know, okay, here's one.
Okay.
Yes. The Tragedy of Arthur by Arthur Phillips.
Okay.
This is... I hope that his friend was an English major, because that would make this even better. But The Tragedy of Arthur is a novel with at least three Arthurs in it, two of them being Arthur Phillips, and then there's the author Arthur Phillips. So the main character in this book, and it's a novel, is named Arthur Phillips. And his father, for most of his son's adult life, has been in prison for forgery. As his father is finishing the years in prison, he tells his son, Arthur Phillips, and the father's name is Arthur Phillips as well, he tells the son that he has in his possession a lost Shakespeare play, which is the history of King Arthur. Here's the third Arthur. And Arthur Phillips, the son, who actually hates Shakespeare, has to decide whether it is a real Shakespeare play or whether it's one of his father's fabulously executed forgeries. And what we're reading is the introduction to the publication of that play.
Oh.
And it's so clever. It's just absolutely just a delight to read. So there's that for fiction. Another book that would be really good is Patti Smith's book from last year,
which
is now out in paperback.
Yes, it's marvelous. I was so amazed. I wasn't a big fan of Patti Smith's, but what a book that was. Really good. The other book that you told us about, and I just loved, was Destiny of the Republic, and we booked Candace on September 29. It is such a fascinating book, Nancy. I loved it.
It is. It is. It's just great. And, you know, the funny story that I heard the editor of this book speak, and of course Candace Millard wrote this book a couple of years ago called River of Doubt.
Yes, which also
about,
great.
Yes, about Theodore Roosevelt after he finished out his serving as president, took a trip down the Amazon, a hitherto pretty much unexplored portion of the Amazon, with his son and some Brazilian explorers. And it was just such a wonderful book and really was an unexpected bestseller, which is it's always so nice to be able to say those words.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a first-time writer. Here's a subject that's a little bit off the beaten track, literally in some ways. and it was wonderful. And then I guess what her editor said is that he said to her, "Well, Candace, what's your next book going to be?" And she said, "Well, I really think I want to write about President James Garfield." And the editor said his jaw just dropped. He said, "James Garfield? What is there to say about him?" Because, of course, all we know, most of us know, is that he was killed by an assassin, shot by an assassin, and died. Well, it turns out there is so much more to that story, and the destiny of the Republic. It really makes you think, what if he had lived?
Yes, doesn't it?
And how the world would be different, how everything would be different. So
yeah.
It's wonderful. And yeah. It would be wonderful for anyone who's a history fan, who likes true crime, for the first callers who loved true, who read those books by Robert Bloch and
mm-hmm.
not true crime, but liked things like that.
Mm-hmm. I had exactly the same reaction after I read it. I thought, what if, because we do that with other presidents, particularly
right.
those in our memory, John Kennedy had lived. What if James Garfield had lived? He was just such an accomplished, good man.
Yes. Yeah, that's a wonderful way to put it. Yep.
Well, we all think you should give this book to each other for holidays. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful book.
And do you remember the book I talked about last year, The Hare with Amber Eyes?
Yes.
Well, that book is now out in paperback, and I just want to say once again that I think that this is the perfect book for almost anybody on your holiday list.
Okay.
Because it's history, it's family memoir, the writing is understated and simply gorgeous, and it's and people who love art or art history, people who are collectors, it's about a collection of 240-something Netsukis, the Japanese
mm-hmm.
monopoles,
mm-hmm.
that the author Edmund Duval, who is the leading ceramicist in England, that he inherited from one of his relatives.
Mm.
And the story of that collection and the story of his family, it encompasses everything, literary history, art history. I mean, it's World War II, it's oh, my gosh. I couldn't imagine a better book.
Now, there's the highest recommendation from Nancy Pearl. All right. Good. Thanks, Boyd, very much for your call. Let's go to Jeff in Wausau. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Kathleen and Nancy. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm calling to, first of all, thank another caller probably over a year ago for recommending Horatio Hornblower.
Oh, yes.
He had called in and said, "This is a wonderful book." Well, I went out and got the first one, and I was hooked. I'm on book number 10 now.
Oh, my.
There's 11 in the series, and I'm starting to get worried.
What next?
What am I going to replace it with?
Well, have you read the Maturin and Aubrey book by Patrick O'Brien?
No.
Okay.
Could you repeat that again?
Okay. The first one... they're a series of seagoing books set during the Napoleonic era, featuring by Patrick O'Brien, and that's B-R-I-A-N, Patrick O'Brien. And the first one is called Master and Commander.
You know, I did have the first one. I had trouble with the English usage.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do so much interpretation that at times you lost the story.
I think that if you give it a little bit longer, you'll
okay.
find that it becomes that usage becomes maybe not second nature, but much easier. When I read them, and there's more than 20 of them, so that will keep you at sea for a long time. I was kind of a vasting and a hoying everybody, and talking about letters of Mark and Napoleon and what's going to happen at Waterloo and everything. I mean, it's just, it's kind of a natural follow up to the Horatio Hornblower book.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. So your rule of thumb, 50, go past 50 pages?
I think I would go past, I would go past it.
Okay.
In this case.
All right. Ron in Langlade. Hi, Ron.
Hey, good morning, and nice to talk to you. You know, with the holidays coming up, I was wondering if Nancy knows of any publishers that print books in the United States. It seems like every book I open is always printed in China. So I'd appreciate a little holiday help on that.
All right.
Well, actually, not to sound self-serving, but my book, More Book Lust, and Book Crush, the book for recommended reading for kids and teens, were both published, printed in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I thought that was pretty cool. It does seem as though it's much less expensive to get the books published abroad, particularly in China. Besides those two, which I just happen to know because I toured that plant, the printing plant, to see it being done. I don't know of any offhand that I could say, oh yes, this one is.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ron, for your call. I'll give this one to you. We need to take a pause so you can think about it while we're pausing. From Diane and Nina, our 11-year-old son loves to read, particularly enjoys adventure series, Alex Rider, Percy Jackson, and the Olympians and the Heroes of Olympus. He even read the entire Hardy Boys series when he was younger. Do you have any suggestions for a book series that would be appropriate for our preteen? And I'll give you a moment to think about that.
Okay.
All right. And we'll welcome more phone calls, too. Nancy Pearl is our guest, Librarian of the Year, author of the many books in the Book Lust series. If you need recommendations, further recommendations for books, for travel books, for people of all ages, she's written a whole series of books, and they're filled with great advice. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up tomorrow during this time period, we'll speak with Ali Soufan. He is the author of The Black Banners, The Inside Story of 9/11 and the War Against Al-Qaeda. Ali was born in Lebanon, came to the United States when he was a child. On sort of a dare, he decided that he would join the FBI after he graduated from college. He became a person who was on the front lines against Al-Qaeda for some 20 years and writes extensively about what kinds of interrogation techniques work and what does not work. Enhanced interrogation techniques he thought were just ridiculous, that his technique was to try to outwit people by knowing a whole lot about the Quran and being able to give them different interpretations and knowing what he was talking about, and also finding out what the weak spots were in a human being. It's a fascinating book, and his life has been absolutely fascinating. So he'll be with us tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Nancy Pearl is with us now. We're getting book recommendations and having a great hour. And I'm sure you've come up with the 11-year-old preteen series.
The one I would recommend is the one I actually suggested earlier about steampunk. But these are books that I think that the 11-year-old young man would really like. They're by Scott Westerfeld, and it's a series, a science fiction adventure. The first one is called Leviathan, Leviathan.
Okay.
And I think those are just would be just perfect. I can't remember if the email mentioned the Alex Horowitz books. I think...
No.
Oh, okay. Any of the books by Alex Horowitz, which are kind of about a young James Bond.
Oh.
And the first one starts when the doorbell... Something like, when the doorbell rings at 3 a.m., you know it's not going to be good news. but they're wonderful adventure books.
Okay.
And I will find... I will... find the first one to give you.
Okay.
But we can go on.
Okay. Okay.
I can. My granddaughter told me that my super talent, the thing that I was the best at, was multitasking.
You have to be. You gotta multitask your brain. Your brain is amazing.
Okay, the Anthony Horowitz books, their series is all about a boy named Alex Rider.
Okay.
And so take a look at those.
Okay.
The Stormbreaker is the first one, I believe. Okay.
Here's another one I found on your Facebook thing. Tell me more about this. Love the writing, the story, the well-drawn characters, and the World War II home front setting of Ellen Feldman's Next to Love. Book groups take note.
Yeah, this is a novel, again, that I just picked up and started reading without any great expectations for it. And it is just a charming, charming book. It's charming and sad and realistic, but it's about a group of three women and their lives in the years just leading up to World War II and following World War II. What happens when their husbands and boyfriends go off to war? And I love the way that she handles time in this book, so that it goes back and forth, and you know the futures, and you know a bit about the past, but it's all as it's just marching day by day almost through those years. And the cover is lovely.
Hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Mary in Green Bay, hi.
Good morning. My question is about a diversity book club that I belong to, and we're looking for a book to understand Somalia better. We have an emerging group of Somalian people living in our community now.
What I would do if I were you is go to, I would check with the librarian at your local library, because they can do a subject search and give you some really good suggestions. I was hoping that you would say you wanted a book about Sierra Leone, because there's a wonderful, wonderful novel about Sierra Leone called Memory of Love by a woman named Aminata Forna. But I'm just sort of looking through some of the Somali stuff, and I don't see anything. Oh, wait a minute. I think that Nuruddin Farah, Farah, is a Somali writer. Yes. Okay. There's a book called Secrets by Farah, Farah. And I always find that reading really well-written novels can give you a sense of the history almost better than a history can. Do you know what I mean?
So the title is Secret?
Yes, Secret, Secrets.
Okay.
But almost anything that you can find by Farah would be good.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Thanks very much. Joan in Eau Claire, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning to your guest. My question is, I've been introduced to a book by our writer's workshop that I had attended back in March. The name is The Hunger Games. I have read it, and I have very distinct opinion of it, and I'm interested in your opinion of this book, Nancy.
When The Hunger Games came out, I was predisposed to be a fan of Suzanne Collins and her books, because she wrote a book for younger children, 11, 12-year-olds, called Gregor the Overlander, which was one of the best fantasies I had read since Harry Potter. I really loved The Hunger Games, and I loved it because it was the kind of book, a dystopian novel for teens, that just was absolutely, totally awful to think about, the situation that these teenagers were in. But she handles it in such a way, the plot moves in such a way, that you're not aware of that really. It doesn't sink in until the book is done and you're thinking about it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Joan, for the call. Email from Wendy, who's looking for a book for a 9-year-old girl who is an advanced reader.
I guess it would depend on... Okay, I would recommend a book called Everything on a Waffle by Polly Horvath. Almost anything by Polly Horvath. Maybe I should take out the almost any. I would suggest anything by Polly Horvath. I think that that's really wonderful. How to Steal a Dog is a fun one. So Barbara O'Connor is an author to look for. Linda Urban is an author to look for. And again, libraries, your Wisconsin libraries have wonderful, wonderful children's librarians, and they can certainly help you find something that's just mm-hmm. great that you can then...
How do you spell Polly's last name, Nancy?
Horvath.
Okay. Great. Saul is next in Stevens Point. Hi, Saul.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say I always listen to these recommendations for kids' books, like, and buy them for my nieces, and, of course, I read them before I send them and really enjoy them. When that person called up about an alternative, and another novel in the vein of Hornblower, and you mentioned O'Brien, who I'm crazy about, I got one of those recorded books, and I was very much one of those people that thought this is a very lazy way to go about literature. But there's a guy that reads Patrick O'Brien that's the absolute best reader I've ever heard. His name is Patrick Tull. I should say was. He died 2 years ago, about a year after O'Brien died. Mm. He did all 20 novels for recorded books. He's also done the Brother Cadfael series and the Blue Nile, the White Nile, all sorts of books for them, but he is a phenomenal reader. So for somebody that feels uncomfortable with the language, he really carries you into it. You start to live in that environment a little bit, and it gets you past that, mm-hmm. that point where he was talking about it.
Oh, what an excellent point.
Yeah, like, that's a great suggestion. That's great.
Mm-hmm. It's like seeing somebody who really knows Shakespeare. All of a sudden, whoop, you understand Shakespeare right away.
Right.
Well, this guy has like 20 dialects, and it's hard to believe you're listening to one person. I've heard Dale, who does the Potter series, the Harry Potter series, not as good, if that's possible to believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a book for your nieces. How old are they now?
They are now 8 and 6.
Okay, so they're a little young for this one, this book that I want to just put in, describe, because I think this would be a great gift for kids who are about 4 years older, I would say 12 and young teens. But it's by a woman named Miley Malloy, M-E-L-O-Y, and it's called The Apothecary. And it's about...
Is it M-I-L-E-Y?
M-A-I-L-E.
M-A-I-L-E.
Yes, yeah. I just learned how to pronounce it. So that's
okay.
But it's too old for your nieces, but it's a wonderful, wonderful fantasy about a girl who's... And it's set in a period that we don't normally get books for teens about or that have anything to do with this, but it's set in the 1950s, and her parents are screenwriters, scriptwriters in Hollywood. And because of the blacklist, because of McCarthyism, they can't get a job there. So they move to England and take their daughter there, who is starting, of course, then a new school and making new friends, all at the age of 14, and becomes involved in this in a plot, trying to stop a plot to bring evil into the world. Which is all good around an apothecary shop.
Oh, I want to read it.
It's so good.
Sounds good.
It is. It's great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Saul. Thanks so much for your call.
Yeah,
Sue in Green Bay is next. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to recommend a book that's being promoted by our community read program in Green Bay called One Book, One Community. The book is The Late Homecomer, and it's the only nonfiction book by a Hmong author with national distribution. The author is, we would pronounce it Cao Kalia Yang, but one of the things I've learned is she would pronounce it Gao Kalia Ya. It's a great story about, it's really a love letter between the author to her grandmother, and just gives you a great sense of Hmong culture, Hmong history, and what it's like to be an immigrant into such a foreign land. To the extent where she became, the author, who's a wonderful speaker, a great writer, became a selective mute. Because if people weren't going to listen to her parents, they didn't need to hear her voice either. She's amazing.
And what's the name of it again, please?
So, The Late Homecomer.
The Late Homecomer.
And I just think it's so wonderful that Green Bay picked that book, because it's not a brand new book. It really has, this sort of deep, you put it so well, but it really speaks to that whole immigrant experience in a voice that we haven't heard from. And I think that's so great that Green Bay picked that.
Yes.
And we were really blessed to have her come and speak here, and you saw a defiance that I don't think that we normally think of such a soft-spoken person as having. She spoke at a high school and a couple times stomped her foot in just this way that showed the spark beneath this quiet exterior.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Oh, it sounds marvelous. Thank you so much. That is something to ponder, isn't it? You probably have other kinds of suggestions when we think about our ancestors, all of our ancestors who came from other places to this country, and what a thing to do, to fashion a whole new life for yourself and your family in a place that culturally is so different.
Yes, and I think that, you know, it reminds me, you're saying that reminds me of another new book it came out a few months ago now, and it's called The Arrogant Years, by a woman named Lucette Lagnado, and she and her family moved here from Egypt, from Cairo, and moved into a community of mainly Middle Eastern Egyptian Sephardic Jews living in New York, and her experience and her mother's experience of being immigrants in this country that is so different from their way of life in Egypt was just fascinating to read.
The Arrogant Years.
Yes.
Okay. Nancy Pearl, our guest this hour, Librarian of the Year, author of the many books in the Booklust series, the originator of what you were doing in Green Bay, what you were doing because of what Nancy started in Seattle. If all Seattle read the same book, you hear her frequently on Morning Edition on NPR. She does a television show. She does appearances all over the world, really. And she's with us frequently. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Sue, thanks for your call. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, David in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually am, it seems the hornblower topic's a hot one today. I wanted to chime in on that and offer, it's not a nautical series, but I devoured the hornblower series and have actually read some of the books three different times and found them to be wonderful page turners in comparison to the Patrick O'Brien books, which I really labored with and found them to be significantly slower paced, if that makes any sense.
Oh, they are, yes.
And maybe I'm just a trashy novel kind of person, but I do enjoy a page-turner, and sometimes when I have time to read, a light read is very enjoyable. And I did read two of the Patrick O'Brien books and put them down because I just found myself not able to, you know, deal with them. And I read almost all of the Sharp series, and I believe it's Bernard Cromwell. And right. they're also set in the Napoleonic era, and it's a rifleman and it, back in that time. And it's an infantry-type military series that I found to be very much like the Hornblower series in that there was a lot more action and much more captivating, at least to my maybe lower-brow taste.
Oh, stop putting yourself down as a reader. Don't ever apologize for what you read. The Bernard Cromwell books, or however we're going to pronounce his first name, that's a wonderful suggestion as well. And I was going to say that, but I couldn't remember his last name, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah, but I do recommend the Sharp series. There are about, I want to say, 15 to 18 of them, and real fun books.
Thank you very much, David, for your call.
You're welcome.
Mary in Cedarburg, hi.
Hi, I'm glad to be on the show today. I'm basically a history, American history reader. I usually cut my history off at the 1900s, so I stay older than that. But I found a book that broke my rule, and it's called Finding Everett Ruth. And he's somebody I'd never heard of. I picked up the book, I saw his face, and I thought, who is this guy? Something grabbed me. And it's an almost 400-page book, and I could hardly put it down. It's history, it's biography, it's travel, and it's mystery. And the mystery still goes on today, even though he disappeared in the early 1930s at 20 years old. So I love the book.
And have you read The World on Fire by Amanda Foreman?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, I think that this will fit into what you usually read. It's the story of the Civil War and Britain's involvement in the American Civil War.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
And oh my gosh, it is so good. It is one of those books that just introduces you to just so many people that you have to write down their names, and then you want to go find out more about them. You want to read books about them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a book that made me think about, you know, sometimes I just feel so despairing of the way our government is not working very well these days.
I'm on that theme, too. I'm with you, Nancy.
And, you know, I think this is the end of the world, and, it's just awful. And then then when I read this book, I saw, my gosh, during the Civil War, I mean, the legislature, the Congress was just in a mess. I mean, the hatred and the partisan bickering, it was just so personal. And you know, many people know this, but if I knew it, I had forgotten it, that one of the senators beat up another senator, attacked him on the floor of the Senate with a
yes.
cane.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's all in here, too, and it's all about why the South, how the South got Britain's support, and, I mean, there's just so much in there. And the author is Amanda Foreman wrote, her first book was about, called Georgiana, Duchess of Devonshire. I think that's the subtitle, but it's called Georgiana. And it's just a fabulous, fabulous biography of this very interesting woman who happens to be the person whom Princess Diana was most frequently compared to, although Georgiana lived in the 19th century.
All right.
Lovely book.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Mary.
Well, again, I would recommend Finding Everett Ruth. It's a great read.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much for the call. Here's one from Alice. I love the name Alice. Alice. Nobody's called Alice anymore. I suggest Thunder Dog by Michael Hingson. I heard him speak at a recent webinar published in August. This book focuses on his whole and inspirational life. However, he is perhaps most known as one individual who survived 9/11 by exiting the Twin Towers with his guide dog, Griselle, a yellow lab. At the time, Hingson was a manager of a business in the Twin Towers.
Wow.
Well, that sounds interesting, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Cookie in Crivitz. Hello, Cookie.
Hi. I have a book to recommend that's totally different from what's been recommended so far. It's a book for meditators. It's called One, O-N-E, and it has about 40 artwork pictures, and on the opposite page, it has inspirational comments from world people.
Mm.
And a series of meditations, of which 20 are done already and are available online for free, have been finished, and at some point the next 20 will be done, and that will be available on a CD for people to purchase as well, unless they wanted to go online and do them for free. But it's available from New Momentum for Human Unity. You'd have to go online to find that. And a woman from Milwaukee who is a former Catholic sister who was the head of the School Sisters of St. Francis has initiated this book. So I suppose you could do a search for
right.
Francis Rothleber and find it as well.
Thank
but
you.
It is wonderful. You can look at these beautiful art pieces
mm-hmm.
and then read the quote and be brought into such a different kind of experience.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Sounds like something I could use in my life. Yeah, slow it all down a bit. Thank you, Cookie. I do recommend, and I like the guy. He's like my Irish buddy. Chris Matthews' book on JFK is really quite good. I've read a lot about Kennedy, and it's he spent a lot of time on it. He really dug around and interviewed many, many people who knew him very well. And you know, Chris is smart. He's over the top sometimes, but I enjoyed it, Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. Terry in Menasha. Hi, Terry.
Oh, great. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
I have a daughter who's in her mid-30s, and she loves Robin Mather nonfiction. She writes about homesteading kind of things, but she needs some fiction work. And I picture something kind of like a modern-day Edna Ferber with homesteading involved.
Uh-huh.
Any ideas?
There's a book, a new book out called Dakota. Which I think would, let me try to find that for you, which I think would be just what you're looking for. It's published, I believe, by the University of Nebraska Press.
Is it modern day?
Well, it is not modern day. It's older.
Is there anything you can think of that's modern?
Modern home, well, they're mostly humorous. You think she'd want humorous?
A little bit of humor, but I think she wants something that's kind of like, you know, not too sentimental, kind of like bittersweet.
Right. Let's see. There's a memoir, there's a Montana memoir. Oh, my goodness, that is a hard question. And I don't think there is anything that I can come up with that fits that.
Knowing how she described her, though, give her something that maybe is not quite as narrow that you know she'll love.
Well, I think that book Dakota
All right.
would be a good one.
Okay.
I think that would be a good one. And then I would go and give her My Antonia.
Oh, I love that book.
By Willa Cather.
Oh, I love that book.
So try that one, too.
Yeah. When did I read that? It must have been in high school.
In high school is when
mm-hmm.
I read it first.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so worthwhile living, you know, rereading it. Oh, here's another one.
I knew this was going to happen,
yeah,
Nancy.
Right.
yep.
Angle of Repose by Wallace Stegner.
Oh, Angle of Repose, Wallace Stegner. Okay.
So those are, I mean, that book, everybody, that's a book that everyone should read.
Okay.
Just absolutely everybody.
All right, Nancy. Okay, we'll do it. Let's go to Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling to suggest a book.
Okay.
There's a wildlife artist in Monaco, Wisconsin, named Bob Metropolis. He has a gallery there called Parkside Gallery, and he just came out with a book called What Is It?, where he focuses in on one part of an animal, and you look at that picture and you think, well, what is that? And then you turn the page and it shows what animal it is. It's a children's book, but it's made very durably, and it has interactive sound, so you push a button and you can hear the first picture actually is a loon, so you hear the sound of the loon.
Oh.
But he's a renowned wildlife artist. He's had duck stamps and so on, and this book is his first book. He also has a person that has had learning disabilities in his past, and he talks about that. He's a very interesting person, and the book is just beautiful. It'd be a wonderful Christmas gift.
Sounds great. Thank you, Mary. Like going to a museum. That's good. Thank you very much for the call. Oh, we're out of time.
Nancy, I know. It always goes by so quickly.
I know, doesn't it? It just goes by. Everything does, Nancy. It just goes by. But you've left us with wonderful recommendations, as you always do, and all of your books. In case people haven't seen them, Nancy has a whole series of books, Book Lust series, so look those up. And thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome, Kathleen. Thank you.
Nancy Pearl, our guest this hour, Librarian of the Year, her latest award for 2011. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We'll be with you again tomorrow. I think we're going to talk about Mars at 9:00.